The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com, I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today it's the New York Times best-selling author of No Fortunate Son. Well, he's got a brand new book. It's called The Insider Threat. This, yet another Pike Logan thriller, Brad Taylor. Brad, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Brad, what is this? Pike Logan's what? Sixth book or something?
Actually, his eighth book.
His eighth. Tell me a little bit about Pike Logan.
He's a member. He's an operator of extra legal counterterrorism organization, and he's a team leader of one of the teams that runs around. He's had a hard life as it's gone through the series. He left the unit. Now he's a civilian. He's running a cover organization, archaeological cover organization, which allows him to penetrate certain areas for counterterrorism operations.
And, you know, we see that there are people that die maybe in some of the countries that they're fighting. Could they be like undercover people also, or perhaps not? When you see something like that, what's the first thing you think of?
Well, usually if there's – what specifically are you talking about? Like our military people?
Civilians.
Generally, if something like that happens, you won't hear it on the news. They'll report, you know, diplomatic something or other, but they won't ever – you'll never know – who they're really working for. So they're, you know, if an embassy gets blown up and there's 12 bodies in it, two of them may be CIA, but there nobody's going to come out and say that.
Okay. Now, and is that just something that the government wouldn't do, or is that something the news
Task forces, they never want to disclose CIA personnel. It's just something that's kept close hold, just for obvious reasons somebody would target them. But the task force isn't real. It's something I made up, actually, because I did not want anybody to think I was writing about real organizations I've served within, which are classified. So we don't really have anything like that that's that extra legal without any oversight.
And, you know, I should mention, too, Brad, that you were with the Delta Force, Special Ops, eh?
I was.
What's that like?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of training.
It sounds dangerous.
It can be dangerous, no doubt about that. But it was I enjoyed every minute of it.
I think Chuck Norris had a film called Delta Force.
Oh, yes.
How close is that, or is that just truly fiction?
Wow, that's about as far away as humanly possible. That movie was absolutely no reality base to it at all.
So was that more of a comedy for you?
Yeah, well, actually, that movie came out before I was in the unit, so I guess when I saw it, I was like, well, that's neat, but I mean, it's not. I've seen it since, and we all giggle at it.
The Insider Threat, this Pike Logan novel, is like it's almost ripped from the pages of the newspapers today.
Yeah, and that's actually the hardest thing about this. This is the hardest book I've written. Precisely because I wanted to write about ISIS. I was looking at ISIS as something to write about. But back then, I wasn't sure. This was maybe two books ago, in Days of Rage. I wasn't sure if they were just going to be a flash in the pan. I mean, I fought Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is a pre-runner of ISIS. Then they, you know, we got rid of them. They came back, got rid of them. And then they took over Mosul. And I said, okay, they're players. They're staying. Jabhat al-Nusra was in Syria. I was looking at them really heavily. And now ISIS has eclipsed them. And so I started looking at, you know, what is the big threat? And the big threat is that somebody with an American passport or German passport or something like that is going to go get trained and come home. And I started doing a lot of research on the foreign fighter flow and how they get recruited and things like that. And it turns out that generally most of the foreign fighters that go over there have one foot in the region already. Their father's from Yemen. Their name is Mohammed. They're Muslim from birth. They spend a significant amount of time outside, even if they have an American passport. Anwar al-Awlaki, the guy we killed in Yemen, comes to mind. I mean, yeah, he had an American passport, but he spent maybe a year in America. And I thought what would really be a threat was if they had some pie in the sky, apple pie, blonde-haired, blue-eyed John Smith that decided to go over there. There's no profile, no connection to anybody. And one other thing, they can't be on social media. We track them on social media pretty heavily. And so that's what I set out to explore in the Insider Threat.
Or maybe even a Jacob, huh?
Exactly.
Of course, Jacob is one of the participants in
the
Insider Threat. Yeah. This book, you've got people from America. I believe they're the Lost Boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah, that's the cell. The one of them does have has relations in Jordan, Hussein. But they get recruited. And when I did the research, there's no silver bullet to stop in the recruitment. I mean, everybody, you would think there'd be one thing. Why are all these people flocking to Syria from all these various countries? And there's not. It's just it's from one end of the spectrum to the other. And so I try to develop that theme, that it's not everybody's going over there strictly for the religion. Some of the Lost Boys are. Jacob is not. He's going for his own personal reasons. He doesn't really care about Islam. And all of them, they were in reform schools in Florida, and they have no social media presence. There's nothing about them, and they just disappear. And they're absolute nobodies in Florida, so nobody really looks for them. Well, they pop up in Syria, they become somebodies.
No, I always thought that maybe if you were in prison for murder or for something, they should put you right like in a special ops unit just of prisoners. But after reading this book, maybe not so much.
Right, yeah. Don't have a lot of moral certitude with what they're doing.
You know, the United States, they've had some prisoners here from the Middle East. There was a deal that swapped, I think, one for many. Maybe they did. I don't know, but why didn't the United States maybe put some sort of a tracking device on them like they do elephants or something like that?
Well, the deal was brokered through Qatar. Qatar has a lot of ties to the Taliban. Qatar has a lot of ties to a lot of extremist groups. In fact, some people in the Qatar government are funding extremist groups, not officially part of the government, but they're all rich over there, so they're doing it. And they're the ones that received them. And there's no way that we wouldn't be able to broker a deal if we were going to tag them, you know, with some kind of geolocation device. They'd just pull it out of their skin and be done with it.
Well, if they knew it was there, huh? Or do they have that
technology
sophistication?
We don't have the capability for that. We actually used to look for that. We called it was the mythical naked man tag. So if you had a naked man, you could tag him without him knowing. That was a mythical thing you wanted. But everything requires, Hollywood can do a lot of stuff, but everything requires one thing, and that's power. So your device is only going to be as good as your battery, and your battery is only going to be as good as, I mean, you could put a tag on there that lasts a year, and he'd be toting around a car battery. You could put a tag on there that's going to last for the duration of your mission. He has a small watch battery, something like that, but you're not going to be able to put anything else. So GPS signals, if you want to do geolocation through GPS, which is what you'd have to do to track them, it's got to see the sky, and once it gets about a millimeter deep underneath the skin, it's no good.
All right, so the insider threat. Tell me a little bit about this book without giving too much away.
So I had the Lost Boys and I had the Islamic State, but I didn't really have a plot. And my wife, who now gets to pick where I go to book research, said, we're going to go book research in Italy. And I said, what am I going to do about Italy? I mean, I didn't have to use Italy in the book, but if I wanted research, that's where I was going. And then Pope Francis, for the first time ever, the first pope to actually denounce a extremist group. Other popes have said, you know, this is bad, we shouldn't be doing this, but they've never come right out and said, you are evil. And after the Yazidi massacres at Mount Sinjar, he came out and said, ISIS is evil, we need to get rid of them. ISIS turned around and said, we're going to raise a black flag in the Vatican. I said, I got a plot. So that's where it came from.
Wow, that's great. I mean, you know, not only a trip there, but also an idea was inspired from there. Pike Logan, you know, reading this, it is quite the page-turner. And we see Jennifer in her also. Tell me about Jennifer.
Jennifer's doing a lot of growing. She obviously, they met in the first book, and she's usually has kind of a rose-colored glasses, black and white. It's either good or bad. She's not a big believer in the greater good. You know, in other words, stealing is wrong. It doesn't matter if you're stealing to feed a hungry family or stealing, period. It's just wrong. And she's learning now that, you know, maybe the world isn't black and white. And she's doing her own growing, trying to track down the Lost Boys.
All right. Now, you had in here a chemical that Jennifer put on the back of her blouse.
The infamous ABS.
Yes. Does that really exist? And what does that do?
I can't curse, but they don't know the chemical. They can't pronounce the chemical compound, so they call it ABS, which stands for atomic blow blank. And basically, it causes gastric distress. You apply it to yourself, and it causes extreme gastric distress. And it's for non-lethal subduing of people. And so that's what she's trying to do. She's trying to trap this guy. And when he's subdued, it's not because he doesn't realize anything's happened to him. He all of a sudden, all he needs to know is he's got to go to the bathroom really bad. And so that's what she's got on the back of her dress.
ABS really exists?
There are chemicals that will do that. And I've modified it. You know, I put it in a lipstick tube, things like that. So ABS is an acronym I invented. But there are things that will do that.
Really? And I mean, they use that for what purpose?
Well, you mean in the real world?
Yeah, in the real world.
Well, you could use it for a multitude of different purposes, even if it was just cleansing you out for, you know, colonoscopy. There's a ton of different reasons they'd want to use it. And, you know, I picked it for that because it seemed to work.
Okay. So anyway, you've had a lot of experience in the Middle East. You've taken a lot of places that you've been and inserted in the book.
Usually I end up, this book, because it was so current, I've been to Mosul. I know Mosul pretty well, so I didn't have to go there for book research.
But I don't know if you'd want to.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a little bit bad.
I'd rather go to Italy.
But I couldn't use that in the book because the topic is so current. That was the difficulty in writing the book. I had to kind of predict what's going to happen with the Islamic State. It's, you know, the book isn't coming out tomorrow. It's going to take me some time to write it, and it's going to take some time for it to get published. And so I didn't put Mosul in there because I wasn't sure if we weren't going to go take Mosul back. I didn't think we would, and it turned out I was right. We're not. I mean, eventually maybe we will, but it's held up.
So what does the United States and Britain do to maybe eradicate ISIS? And I've also heard ISIL and IS. Mm-hmm. What's the differences, if any?
Well, there's a lot of misconceptions out there. ISIS, people say, stands for Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham. I mean, Iraq and Syria. That's what they say ISIS is. That's not actually accurate. It stands for Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham. Al-Sham is an Arabic term, which really means Greater Syria, which extends down through Jordan, and equates roughly to our term, the Levant. So in one translation, it all depends on who did the translation. One translation was Islamic State of Iraq and Syria and al-Sham. They left the Arabic in there. The other one translated to Levant. So now it's Islamic State of Iraq and Levant. Just depends on which one you're talking about. But people seem to think that there's some confusion about that. We should have just kept calling them Daesh. They actually have I'll butcher the Arabic, but it's the big Arabic name, which the acronym is Daesh. I don't know why we decided to translate it, because when we say al-Qaeda, al-Qaeda means the base. We don't say the base, we say al-Qaeda. Hezbollah means the party of God. We don't say the party of God, we say Hezbollah. So why we chose to translate their name into English, I don't know, but that's what it means.
So what does the United States and Britain have to do? I mean, they're almost like you chop them in half. They're like an earthworm you have, too. They just keep multiplying.
Well, the one thing that aggravates me is we do a lot of sound bites. The Islamic State is a complex, multifaceted problem. I mean, it's in Libya. It's in the Sinai Desert. It's in Iraq, obviously. It's in Syria, northern Syria, Iraq. And all of those components have different solutions to them. I hear sound bites where people say, you know, the Iraqi army fled and the Kurds are fighting, so we need to arm the Kurds. Okay, I'm with you, arm the Kurds, but that's not a panacea. It's like saying we're watching the Battle of Midway and saying the Navy won the Battle of Midway in World War II. We need more aircraft carriers. Well, yeah, aircraft carriers will help, but it's not going to do anything for Germany. By the same token, the Kurds don't have their goal isn't eradication of Islamic State. Their goal is to consolidate the gains they've got, their land. They want a Kurdistan. I'm all for that if it involves getting rid of the Islamic State, but let's not pretend that that's a solution. The Kurds aren't going to free Mosul. The Kurds aren't going into Ramadi. The Kurds aren't going into Raqqa. It's not. They don't have a goal to do that. So it's a much bigger problem set than you hear these sound bites on TV when they throw them out.
No Fortunate Son. That was the book prior mm-hmm. to the Insider Threat.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about Pike's adventure there.
Yeah, he has. That actually came from, you were mentioning the 5-for-1 Taliban swap for the prisoner. That came from Bo Bergdahl. I'd been following Bo Bergdahl quite a bit back when I was in the military when he got captured. I thought to myself, you know, we put an enormous effort to get that guy back. We really did. A lot of search and rescue, a lot of assets dedicated towards him. And I thought, what would happen if they actually captured somebody who was important? Because Joe Biden had a son in the Navy, John McCain's kids in the Marine Corps, all these guys. There's a lot of people. Prince Harry was in the British Army. So you had all these people that are very famous. And if they got, or very important, if they got captured, what would we do? And that's what No Fortunate Son is. Kind of a play on the song No Fortunate Son, except this time he's really unfortunate because he's a senator's son who gets kidnapped. And so it's exploring what would the United States do to get those guys back. When does he draw the line between what that guy's life's worth versus our counterterrorist infrastructure?
So, Bergdahl, what do you think? Paid too much?
Oh, yeah, definitely. No doubt in my mind. That was not a good swap. But there's a lot of things going on there that it's not as simple as a 5-for-1 swap. We were looking at trying to do a misguided, I think, negotiations for peace with the Taliban. So we give you these guys, you'll come to the negotiating table and all this kind of stuff. None of that came to pass. Basically, they got 5 of their hardened fighters back and we got Bergdahl.
You don't hear much about the Taliban anymore.
You do if you follow. I get a lot of news feeds. It doesn't make the news in the American press, you're right. But for instance, they just did a suicide bombing on a NATO convoy today and killed 12 people. So, I mean, there's still conflict going on over there. And there are peace deals being done. They just had a delegation go to Oslo, Norway, and was doing peace. They have an office in Doha, Qatar. They went to Oslo, Norway, and representatives of the government went to Oslo, Norway to try to broker a peace deal.
In your book, The Insider Threat, you talk about ISIS being like a gang. They've got everything correct. It's like the largest gang in the world.
Yeah, they are bloodthirsty. ISIS is the Islamic State has no redeeming qualities. They truly don't. I mean, I'm not being pejorative to them. They are bloodthirsty killers, and they are no better. They remind me of the gang in Road Warrior, or the new movie, Fury Road. That's basically what they do. Kidnapping women or slaughtering people left and right for some ideology that they sometimes don't even understand. A lot of the people who join ISIS are, it's not so much Islam pulling them in, it's their own country pushing them out because they're losers. And they turn to Islam and they say, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And they don't even really understand the religion. They don't understand what they're doing. All they know is they have ultimate power to do whatever they want.
So if somebody's out listening to this right now and they're saying, I'd like to join ISIS or something, what would be something to let them know maybe about who they're trying to join?
The easiest thing they could do is pull up any news reports from anybody who's in there and tried to get back out. There's plenty of the wives that left from Britain. They had five of them made the news, splash in the news. They're all trying to get out. They can't. They're all pregnant now, and they're all being used as slaves for the ISIS folks. ISIS has a pretty slick propaganda machine, but the reality on the ground, you can read reports from anybody that's under ISIS control, and it's absolute misery.
So if the government is watching social media, how are they getting the word out?
Well, there's much more than just social media. I mean, much more than we look at it social media-wise. There's direct messaging on Twitter. They have Twitter handles, upwards of 12,000 Twitter handles where they're putting things out. And there's only so much we can do. As soon as you get into a cycle where you start talking to somebody, they're eventually going to give you a means of communication, which is encrypted, thanks to Edward Snowden, so that they will now talk to him direct, and we won't know about it.
So what do you think of Edward Snowden? I was thinking about a question there. I mean, it seems like that the government was, it was almost like illegal search and seizure, I guess, of your phone and other communications. So what am I missing?
You're missing the big elephant in the room. Most of that is press reports that are not accurate. If people actually knew what happened, a capability does not mean a breach has occurred. I mean, there are plenty of police. I mean, the Army's got a bunch of guns. Do I fear that they're going to come kick my door in? No. Because they have the capability? Certainly they do. They've got M1 tanks. They could flatten my house. But I don't worry about that. And the only thing that they ever took was the metadata. And the metadata was taken as a bit of history. When we did the 9/11 Commission report, everybody looked at, they did the research of what went wrong. They had some guys who were tracking one of the terrorists who ended up flying into the World Trade Center, and they went to a phone company and said, we want to know who else this guy's talked to. Give us the metadata. The phone company says, we don't keep it that long. That's too old. So the solution was, tell the phone companies to keep the metadata so if this happens again, we can find him. They said, that's too expensive. We're not going to do it. The government said, well, can we keep it? They said, sure. And they gave it to us. That's the metadata program. The phone companies already have it anyway, and now the government was having it, and it's caused this huge uproar. People misconstrue the metadata as if they're reading all your Gmail, and they're not. It's just not happening.
So what do you think Russia's doing with that propaganda from Snowden?
Oh, they're definitely, well, more than just, there's news reports now that both China and Russia not only have the propaganda of Snowden, but they've got his data. And he stole, beyond just the privacy concerns and the Fourth Amendment, 98% of what he took was military and national intelligence stuff against foreign adversaries. It was not against, it had nothing to do with personal privacy. And they had, the United Kingdom just had to pull all their spies out of China because of the compromise of that data. So there's been a healthy amount of damage.
So is do you feel that Russia could be the sleeping dog of the world?
I think between Russia and China, they're both the good thing, the difference between them and ISIS is Russia and China are state systems where they value something. There's a lever you can use short of actual conflict. I can say, I'm not going to give you this, or I'm not going to sell you that, or whatever. There's something you can lever to get at because they're still a state system. The Islamic State isn't like that. There's nothing. There's no. You're not going to deter them from anything. There's nothing you could say to them that's going to deter them. I mean, they're already ready to die. And so even death itself, you stop this or I'll kill you. They say, yeah, jihad. They don't care. So there's no negotiating with those guys.
I know drawing a picture of Muhammad is not a good thing to do, and they'll come after you like crazy, but how about a book with Pike Logan? I mean, he's fighting ISIS. Are you afraid for your life or anything?
No, not really.
But you're a Delta Force guy, too, so.
Well, I'm sure they could shoot me in the back walking down the street, but at the end of the day, the ISIS has calculated they want the propaganda. They're looking for the reason to kill. There's a reason that they cut the head off of the soldier in uniform in the United Kingdom. There's a reason they shot the guys in Canada in uniform. The propaganda is instantly there. To kill some civilian on the street, then you have to kind of figure it out. That's not good propaganda. The one that just happened in France, for instance. Was that guy a terrorist or he just crazy? I'm not sure. So they don't get the propaganda benefit. So it kind of tamps down my worry that somebody's going to come hunt me down because I'm not really much propaganda for him.
So do you think when, I mean, you have somebody that starts shooting up a military base and maybe he doesn't have any association with ISIS or anything like that, is it in their interest to say, ah, yeah, he was ours?
It is, but it's also not in their interest to cry wolf. And so you'll have some terrorist groups that'll claim anything that happens. And eventually, next time they make a claim, you're like, ah, they said that last time. And the police will figure out pretty quickly that any terrorist event is based on terrorism is not a bad or good thing. It's just a word like gravity. I mean, there's murder, there's terrorism. So, I mean, when someone does an act, it doesn't necessarily mean they're terrorists. But their intent of that act is what defines terrorism. Doesn't mean they're a good person. They could certainly be a murderer. But we don't need to call it terrorism if it's not terrorism.
So in your book, The Insider Threat, and your other Pike Logan books, you pretty much run this by somebody, so you're not really giving away things that you shouldn't be giving away. Maybe since the last time we talked, which the book was Enemy of Mine. Yeah. Now, that goes back a few years. Mm-hmm. Are there new things out there that you can talk about that maybe you couldn't talk about a couple years ago?
Well, luckily and unluckily, I've been out of the game for a while now. But I follow electronics, hacking, any kind of new technology. I follow it religiously to see what's on the horizon. And a lot of the stuff I come up with now, believe it or not, is not coming from any intelligence organization. It's coming from criminals. For instance, in No Fortunate Son, the task force wants to geolocate a cell phone. And what they do is put a router inside a drone and fly it over the building. And the phone talks to the router because it's already talked to. They spoof a coffee shop, ISP. And that came because criminals are doing it in New York. They spoof an ISP of Starbucks. You walk out of a Starbucks, they fly the drone over your head. You don't even know it's there. Your phone, because we're all lazy, remember this network. It remembers the network. The phone thinks it's inside Starbucks. It talks to the drone. The drone talks to the phone, steals all the passwords and everything out of the phone, and then starts getting their bank accounts and that kind of stuff.
You could be doing that through your house and stuff. They could be flying these over your house, or not necessarily because
I guess they could do somebody's house, but not my house. I've got encryption on mine, but Starbucks is an open, it's an open system. There's no encryption to it.
So. Yeah, I think Starbucks, McDonald's, all the restaurants have that. That's one of the things that they do to get you in there, I guess. Eh?
Yeah.
All right, well, what's next, for Pike Logan? And before I say that, I guess, with all the books in the Pike Logan series, how much time does that take? I mean, is he getting older year by year, or is it just
No, I've minutes? Made a conscious decision. Robert Crace is one of my favorite authors, and I talked to him about this and said, you're a guy originally, when I first started reading him, he was a Vietnam vet. He'd be, should be in a wheelchair now. And he said, yeah, I made a conscious decision. I'm not going to age him anymore. That's what they are, and I'm going to do that with Pike. It's kind of a weird thing because I do have presidential administrations. There's an election coming up, and it kind of tracks our own cycle. So there's going to be a new president. He's going to have to make choices on the task force, and all there's going to be changes and everything, but I'm not going to make Pike, he's going to be 80 years old running around with a baseball bat.
Well, tell me about President Warren just a little bit.
He's just a complete amalgamation of – I just completely made him up. He's not supposed to be – One thing I didn't want is I didn't want anybody saying I had some kind of political agenda this way or that way. I just wanted a president. And so he's very firm on national security. And so I don't ever delve into his social policy, his economic policy, or anything like that. I do delve into a little bit the mud wrestling of politics and how that's kind of, not very nice. But when he deals with a task force, it's all national security. And so that's where I kind of niche him. Whatever he's doing out there for whatever social agenda is going on, I'm not talking about that.
So who do you think will be the next president?
Well, we got about 48 people running. I don't know.
All right. So let's talk about your website. I'm sure that you have one. Or maybe Pike Logan has one also.
Yeah, no, I've got actually we have the domain name, but nothing's there. BradTaylorBooks.com. And, they can get an excerpt of any of my books, The Insider Threat or any of the other ones.
All right. So when you're not in, Italy thinking about books, writing books, what do you do for fun? I mean, these things must take a good year.
No, actually, I'm putting two out a year now. So it was one every 6 months. So I don't have a whole lot of time to do anything. I'm full-time writer now. Between the book research, I still do some security consulting, so I still have a couple contracts I do. And then the writing, that's it.
That's enough with two books out a year. That's quite a bit. I don't suppose you're going to try for three?
Actually, I had three last year.
Did you?
Well, it was only because they pushed the publication date up. It was supposed to come out in July or January 7th, and they pushed it to December 30th, which, boop, just happened to make a third one for that year.
Wow, there you go. Well, the brand new book is The Insider Threat. This is a Pike Logan thriller. And I tell you what, this thing is a page-turner comedy. I mean, there's even funny parts in here. I was laughing out loud. Things, you know, ISIS, what a threat. I know somebody that wrote in here said that ISIS apparently said they'll hang a flag in the White House.
Yeah, that was their spokesman, media spokesman.
That's scary stuff. But check out The Insider Threat by Brad Taylor. Brad, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Brad Taylor, author of The Insider Threat, a brand new Pike Logan thriller.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.